everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And it's been a very full weekend for us.
It has, and we did go somewhere.
I was going to say that we
didn't go anywhere since we're all based up here at your place. But it was very full. We picked apples. We picked crab apples, which are like the heritage kind. Like they're
chestnut sized.
Of just little apples.
Yep.
They tasted just fine to eat raw.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had borrowed a cider press from a coworker, and away we went, and it became a whole thing.
It did. Like, we...
ground up everything almost everything we harvested.
Yep.
There's a laundry basket of apples that we had picked that we did not include.
Which I can eat.
You can eat. Make. We can make pie. We can make crisp.
Yep.
They'll keep for a little while.
Yes.
So we did all that. And with the cider press, we squished it all out.
Yeah, it was like 5 hours on Friday.
Yeah.
Between picking and...
grinding took a while.
Yeah.
I was working a grinder that you clamp onto the countertop, and you just sort of push everything through. And it worked out pretty well. Every now and again, you had to unscrew the mechanism to get the stems out.
Mm-hmm.
But the chunkiness of it, like, was the appropriate size, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So then we put in a big bag, put in the little barrel, lowered the foot.
Yes, for the press.
And it went down to like a third of its former volume.
Mm-hmm.
It was squished that much.
Yeah.
And we got almost 3 gallons.
Yeah.
So we did 11 quarts, plus there was just a little bit left to drink. So we had some of it, and it's super sour, but also super good.
It's super sour in like... the real cranberry juice way, which is odd because remember when you were excited for cranberry juice like a month ago and I looked at the label, I'm like, this is applesauce that's cranberry flavored.
Yes.
It's basically the reverse of this. It's apple juice.
That just tastes like cranberry.
Like, I guess that's the exact same. But
it is the exact same.
Yeah. But it tastes really good. I don't know what we're going to do with it. I think you have to obviously give a jar to the people who borrowed the cider press to us.
Yes.
Loaned.
Lent.
Yes.
And another coworker too, who is also in that text string of like all the questions.
Yes.
And...
but then we have 9 remaining.
Yes. We can make some good punch. We can make some good drinks.
Yeah, my contribution to Christmas will be, we made this punch with one of our jars because y'all are not getting any more than that from me. We will dilute it with 7-Up.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe we can give one to the uncle on the farm.
Oh.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
So, that was Friday and yesterday with the canning, but there was also a family reunion we went to.
Yes. Out of obligation.
Yes.
That's about it.
I mean, I learned how to play bags.
Yeah. Yeah. You met one of my cousins and chatted, but there were not that many from my generation.
No.
It was... started 49 years ago in one of the branches of my family, and
it sort of makes sense since it's a great-grandparent dissension. Yeah. So,
but it is so boring. It's always been so boring for me to go. Like, this was my first time in like 15 years or something, I feel, and
we did it.
Yeah, or maybe I went like the first year I moved back to Minnesota, but usually I don't. I'm like, nope, have fun.
Yeah.
Report back. But.
So we came back. We made a quick supper.
Yes.
We canned the apple juice, I guess, since.
Yeah. It's... not cider. I don't know.
I think because we strained it, it's juice and not cider.
Oh. But there's some funky stuff.
There were some definite solids that came through.
Yeah. Like so much I ladled some up and you poked it and it kept its form.
Yeah.
So.
Is it proto?
Yeah.
So, it was good. We made some apple cider caramels that we have yet to cut into.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's like a refrigerator caramel, like you put it into a sealed thing. Doesn't get all melty.
I sort of hope that we don't have to wrap each piece.
I don't think each piece. Might. I think just keeping the block and cutting off what you want to eat from it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, because we're not breaking out wax paper to individually wrap caramels.
No, I did that once. It was a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes sort of fast, but...
We don't need to pour more hours into something. Where can we just keep this wrapped in saran wrap inside of an airtight container in the fridge?
I sure hope so.
Yes. So, that was basically our weekend.
Yeah, and then I got up early and chopped up all the veggies.
Yeah.
I made a hash, made a quiche. Just had another piece of quiche because I was hungry.
Yeah.
Planted some native pollinators outside. Mm. So testing one to see how well it really does in shade.
Yeah.
And put some others out. Cardinal flower is an attractor for hummingbirds, and it'd be nice to give them more food supplies for the fall.
Yes.
And I saw two Nashville warblers hopping around in the front garden on the plant stems,
mm-hmm.
presumably eating bugs.
Probably. Because there are a lot of bugs.
Yeah, on the asters, and it's super cool.
Yeah.
There's some bumbles, there's some funky bees, there's some regular bees.
Mm.
There are some, like, cool waspy things.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's a whole neat ecosystem that's happening right now.
And I think in 2 weeks we have our to-do list with removing more buckthorn.
It's true.
And probably transplanting some of the stuff, like some bee balms.
Oh yeah, out to the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crabapple tree will benefit from having less competition once we take out those buckthorn trees.
Yeah.
Because they're legit trees.
Yeah, it's not small. It's like we need a chainsaw.
Yeah, I can't get through with just a loppers.
Yeah.
But we'll get rid of them because they're coated in berries.
Yeah. And comics in the past week. I read Leah Williams' Voyeur, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, good.
Yes. It is her first, like, independent creator-owned.
Nice.
I think. With David Baldion. And I feel he did X-Books. He might have done X-Factor with her.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So, that was a fun indie comic that I tracked down.
I'm excited to try it.
Yeah. Somehow the cover got bent. Because that's how comics roll.
Yeah.
I'm catching up on the X-Books. I read issues 12 and 13 of Exceptional X-Men today, and then found out at the bottom of the letters page of issue 13, oh, that's the end of that title.
Oh.
So, that's cool. Marvel announced, like, after this three-month event where we're pumping out 16 series with,
that's
like...
three issues each?
Or something. Yeah. Something just crazy like that, which I'm not buying any of them. Then they are bringing back, like, Gail Simone's X-Men, Jed McKay's X-Men, but then there's going to be a Cyclops solo series.
Oh.
I think a Wolverine series, and, like, one other one they've announced. And I think they're going to do a big announcement at New York Comic Con next month.
Okay.
About, like...
What's Here's, after this Age of Revelation?
Yes. Which, I mean, I just got the charge for the Marvel Unlimited subscription today for the next year. So we have that, and I think that's probably where I'm going to be moving the majority of my Marvel reading.
Yeah.
Like, taking a tip from Flinkman, who has a spreadsheet, where if he sees something, he's like, oh, that looks interesting, he adds it to a spreadsheet, and the date it hits... Marvel Unlimited.
Do you have that spreadsheet created yet?
No.
Oh.
I'll get there.
I mean, like you said last issue, or last episode, if you remember to go back to it, then it'll actually be worth it, as opposed to, like, if it feels like you're not missing anything, just continuing on, then continuing on is okay, too.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and...
I've been gushing about Captain Planet.
Yes.
So, it's just been great in terms of, like, having some sort of hope for the future.
Because
it's very easy once you start learning about all the conservation stuff to be like, everything's awful all the time and there's no hope for the future.
Yeah.
So.
Remember last week when I brought up that Green Arrow was doing some great stuff in terms of social commentary?
Did they end that book?
Christopher Condon is gone as of issue 31. He announced it on Blue Sky today.
In a planned way, or a...
It sounded like certainly a surprise. He is like, I'm so sorry that I'm leaving this.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, I don't have it with me. Because I actually keep up on that title, I believe.
I think you do.
Rather than add it to the stack.
The gigantic stack that you're flipping through right now.
There's Aquaman in there. I think I might drop Aquaman.
But the Yo-Ho, Hold On To Your Hooks, the Joshuhio one with Aqualad sounds fun.
Yes, that's on their version of Marvel Unlimited.
Ah, gotcha. Yes.
So, anyway, I think that Christopher Condon has a few issues left of Green Arrow, because they just started, I think we're 2 issues into the new arc, so they're probably, DC's typically 6 issues for an arc, I think, 5 or 6.
That makes sense with the question and the Green, yeah. Alan Scott Green Lantern.
Yeah, so I think we have just that left, and then I hope they continue the title. That would be great.
Yeah.
But,
That's disappointing.
It's very disappointing.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know. I also saw that they canceled basically by surprise. What? I was telling you about it last night. Or while we were cooking.
Oh.
Birds of Prey.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. They straight up canceled that. And there were things online where they're like, oh yeah, the writer is just too busy because she's writing a ton between Marvel and DC. And she was like, nope, they canceled it.
Ugh.
So it looks like DC is thinning things out too, maybe?
Oh.
Yeah.
You'd think if Marvel was on a downside, or at least X-Men-wise,
yeah,
that DC would be on an upswing.
Yeah.
But maybe it doesn't work like that. And maybe there's enough, like, indie things happening.
Yeah. I did catch up on Superman.
Oh, good.
It's very good.
Lower Decks continues to be excellent as well.
It's something I have not caught. See, it's right here.
Oh, yeah, the whole stack of them.
Issue 5 is the one on top of that stack.
As has Space Ghost.
Mm.
So I'm excited for that to come out this week.
And you have Dick Tracy that you still need to read from last week.
I do.
And we have the trade paperbacks, the first 2 volumes from FlameCon.
My comics bag is not getting lighter.
Well, I have those here.
I know, but I make a little dent and then it fills up again very quickly.
Yeah. I think that's what winter is really nice for, is
when there won't be like random points where I just go outside and harvest cucumbers and plant flowers.
Yes. But let's talk Alpha Flight. We have 4 issues today. And it makes sense. It's sort of like the introductory Goblin arc before we get too deep into Dream Queen stuff.
And there's space Alpha there's Flight.
Space. We're starting off with issue 54, which this copy is signed by Greg Wright because I brought it to him.
At FlameCon.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
It was. All right. So Goblin. We're in 1988 now. I don't remember that year.
well, no.
We have Bill Mantlow writing, Hugh Haynes is the penciler, Wills Portacio is inks, coloring is Gregory Wright, lettering Janice Chang, and Carl Potts is our editor. So we open with Goblin being very cold, looking towards the headquarters.
And we get little thought bubbles.
Like out in the snow.
And Goblin is retaining the Goblin form to protect Laura Dean.
Yeah. Because Laura Dean would perish.
Yeah, in that cold. The face, I don't know, Goblin's sort of cute in a I'm going to disembowel you sort of way.
I know, I really love Goblin's design. And I feel like even with this issue where you really get introduced to Goblin for the first time, a lot of sympathy for the character.
Yeah.
Like, I actually care about her a lot.
Yeah. Like, dark blue, light blue streaks on the face, red eyes, little bottom fangs that poke up, little cloven hooves. And, I don't know, there's these hints that are dropped of Live World and Dead World.
Mm-hmm.
And my base assumption was Live World was the normal world, mm-hmm. but it's not.
No.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. So,
meanwhile, inside, the elephants are trying to create the base, their own take ownership of Bedlam's base.
Yeah, they're patching up things, like, trying to make it habitable, I guess.
Yeah, Heather's not really for it, even though I thought that she was at the end of last issue.
Mm.
But she's like, there's something evil here.
And Sasquatch is like, Our old headquarters is demolished, aka my mansion.
Yes, I inherited from a crazy old aunt of mine.
Oh.
Is that how you would describe Gilded Lily ever?
No.
Crazy old aunt?
No.
So, there's more discussion.
Yeah, so Purple Girl is thinking back on her own journey to the team and realizes that Goblin is sort of in a similar position. Like, probably doesn't know the extent of her powers and needs help.
And she's also recognizing that, like, she took over her first crush, Northstar. Mm-hmm. She took over Maz and Jeffries and lived it up out on the town for a while. But each time Alpha Flight saved her, like, they took a chance on her.
Yeah.
So, in her mind, she needs to take a chance on Goblin. Sort of pay it forward, as repay what was done for her.
Yes. And she goes to the rest of the team. She's like, this girl is out in the snow. Shouldn't we search for her?
And if we don't, isn't that considered murder to just leave her out there in the
cold?
And
Heather's like, maybe that's best.
She is.
Yeah.
This arc does not
murder
do great
things. Mommy Heather is in full swing. It gets worse, everyone. Don't worry, we'll get to it in this episode where it gets worse.
Like, Heather is just getting more and more tarnished, I feel. Like, I was so in her corner before.
Yeah. But she gives in, and she, Sasquatch and Box go out so Mannequin and Purple Girl can survey the bodies of the derangers in a morgue.
Which feels terrible. But also, why are they hanging out in a morgue? But Purple Girl is real sad. A teardrop falls onto the hand of, I want to say,
Whitman Knapp.
Yes.
Yes.
Whitaker Walt.
Oh.
And they really are hamming up this romance between them.
Oh.
Granted, in this one panel, he looks like he's
12.
12. So, like, that's age appropriate, at least.
Yeah, but we know from the actual written description, not true.
Not at all.
I really just want to write a Deranger series. Like,
what the team could have been?
Bring them back from the dead, or maybe they got transported to a weird corner of Live World.
Oh.
And this is just, like, a Dream Queen illusion. The bodies. I can make it work.
Yeah.
I can make this work. And then they pop back out.
Would you do a time hop? Would it go from the 80s to today?
Yes. But retaining their 80s-ness.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, like that Rockstar one. Like, I forget their names already, but there's...
Oh, no.
I know.
And I mean, the art was so good. Like, I know the background stories, but I can't remember the name.
Yeah. So outside, we do the horror movie trope. They split up.
Because, of course, they do.
Sasquatch, and, though,
gets their eyes gouged by Goblin.
Yeah.
And so then, like, Goblin
she's
gets
like,
flung
oh,
away.
I found Goblin. Just rake across the eyes.
Yeah.
And then Heather hears Wanda's howl and flies towards the location.
Finds Laura Dean out in the snow.
And it's Laura Dean being very cold.
Like, laying in the snow. And Heather's like, she's either freezing or frozen. I should let her. But then she hears Purple Girl's voice in her head. We can't leave.
She's contemplating killing her outright.
Like,
just leaving her in a snowbank.
And Heather's like, blast, out of the mouths of babes comes ... nothing but trouble.
And she's going to bend down to pick up Laura, but then Goblin pops in and slashes at her.
Heather blasts Goblin.
Her battle suit is shorting out and she's bleeding.
Yeah.
Box detects a power surge and rightly thinks that it's the suit activating and comes over as a tank.
Yes. And puts Goblin in a little bubble, like
a
little bulldozer forklift, and then the bubble descends on top. And once he's inside, then Goblin bursts free, which damages Madison because robot parts being scraped aside.
Goblin turns and sees Purple Girl. But then we cut back outside. Heather's picked up by Sasquatch. And she climbs onto Wanda's back, Heather serving as the eyes in this situation.
And Sasquatch is the one moving.
Yes.
We should also say that Purple Girl tells Whitman to stop, and so he does, and Goblin just beams him. Like, he's out and bleeding, but alive.
And then she uses her powers to go inside Goblin's mind, which is sort of shared with Laura Dean.
It's like she has this mind share power, or has developed this mind share power, which is sort of cool. And adds, like, maybe a little bit more dimension to Kara.
Yeah.
But she gets this full background about there's this couple, they got married, and then soon they were pregnant with twins. And the wife is like, has a couple moments of like, you're sort of foisting some of these choices onto me that I wouldn't otherwise make. But it turns out that one of the twins is a mutant, the other is not. And at least the father is one of the foremost anti-mutant advocates. So not a great person.
Nope. And he's like, oh, well, we should probably kill this in utero mutant.
Yes, they're trying to murder Goblin as a fetus.
Yes. And he's like, come on, wife, get this partial abortion with lasers.
I'll be right outside. And then the wife is like, that's not too comforting, Darby, because I'll be inside.
So Laura sensed this and moves in front of Goblin.
To protect her.
Yep.
And even the mother knows, like, you're killing my baby, like, stop, something's wrong.
Yeah. And this means that the radiation experiment has to be called off.
Yeah.
And then Goblin disappears, and Laura was born with autism.
It seems very problematic how autism is described here, maybe.
I don't think it was super well defined or understood.
Did in the
40
80s?
Years ago. Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking with some of this stuff.
Yeah. So then, years later, we jump ahead. Scramble.
And then Bedlam.
He was able to set Goblin free and was used by Bedlam as part of the thwarted plan.
Yeah.
Which catches us up to Nell.
Yeah. So Kara's realizing all this. That they're, like, will hide each other inside of them whenever they're in danger. It's a little bit like Monet and Penance, almost.
Mm.
Who doesn't exist yet?
Nope.
Oh. So Goblin walked so Monet could run.
I guess.
Or fly.
Yes. All right, so
so there's
Purple Girl is then thinking about, like, the psychological pain experienced by both Laura and Goblin, but then Goblin attacks her.
While she's sobbing.
Yes. She slashes Purple Girl's back, but Purple Girl realizes she can talk to Goblin as a person and actually reach her on a human level.
And she's the only one that had this thought, like, out of this whole team of superheroes. She's the only one that's like,
like, maybe I'll use some empathy.
Yeah. She's like, okay, Goblin, I'm not running anymore. You want me? Come and get me. And then Goblin is confused. And Goblin reaches out and touches one of Kara's tears, because she's never seen anyone cry before. Just in time for Alpha Flight to burst through the walls.
And then Goblin gets set off again.
And Kara's like,
mannequin gets slashed. And then Goblin runs through the duct system.
Yeah. And no one's really listening to Kara as she's like, stop.
Yeah.
Goblin is not an enemy here.
Yeah.
And Heather's like, it was your bleeding heart that caused us to spare the creature in the first place. Goblin had her chance. And Kara's like, well, maybe she needs another one. And she dives in front of Goblin to protect Goblin from one of Heather's plasma blasts. So her jacket gets all ripped up.
Yep.
And Goblin also cries. And they hug.
They
and that's
hug.
That's how they end the issue.
Yeah.
Heather.
She tried to murder a child multiple times in this issue.
Yes.
I think you're right. The character development for Kara is really good.
Yeah.
It's character development.
Oh. Har har.
It's, I don't know, like, Heather is turning real dark.
Very, oh, I feel like there's a draconian or some sort of word like that, where very black and white, no room for nuance, like not a whole lot of room for second chances.
That's dualistic.
Oh. But in a harsh, like, I'm going to murder you kind of way.
Yes.
And I feel like she shouldn't be. Like, she should know better.
She should. Does she? No.
No. We are joined by Asta, and by joined, I mean she's napping super hard. I think she pooped.
Yep.
Because it's just sitting between her legs.
Yep.
As they are kicked back.
Yeah. So. That's a sequel.
Oh, it's a sequel?
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
Girl.
She'll clean it up.
Ugh.
All right. Issue 55, Identity Crisis.
We are starting with Sasquatch.
Yeah, we're in the complex, and Wanda's sort of having a little introspective moment.
And there's a bit of a review for readers to sort of get her whole journey. But this is different than we've seen Wanda before. Wanda before seemed more confident in who she was.
Mm.
So something is happening.
She's harboring a lot of self-doubt.
Yes, in an uncharacteristic way.
Yeah.
Which will be explained later. But we do get this, like, full-page thing of all the different stages. Walter the football player, Sasquatch, Sasquatch versus Sasquatch, the Box Hammer, the Hulk, Smart Aleck, the corpse,
mm-hmm.
more Sasquatch versus robot, and now Wanda. In, like, a very 80s workout outfit.
Yeah.
Just a tube top and a bikini bottom with straps.
Heather is like, we need to ditch this headquarters real quick.
She's getting the full, like, there's something evil about this place, and we can't stay here.
But there's a snowstorm, so they're stuck. So she goes to the lab, where Fox and Mannequin are cleaning up the space. Masson phases out of his armor and explains that it's a huge complex, like, it just keeps going down.
It's sort of like an iceberg. There's a tiny little bit on top and then all this machinery underneath.
Yeah. And it goes below the ice layer into the Arctic.
And between Mannequin and Madison and Wanda, they can create a life support system. They can get this place, like, functional to use as a base.
And they're like, we can supply so many fish for us.
Yeah, that's like a little fish suction tube.
Yes.
Those fish don't deserve that.
Purple Girl and Laura are in the infirmary. It's nice, a Bedlam constructed one.
Yeah.
And that's where Purple Girl is trying to understand what happens when the switch happens.
Yeah, and Laura's like, I hide. Goblin hides me. And so Kramer's trying to figure out, like, you mean, like, inside of you? And that's where we got a little bit about Dead World and Live World.
Mm-hmm.
And Kara does another one of the mind shares to try and gain an understanding of what Live World is.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sort of goes in, she experiences it a little bit, and then Goblin is like, go home.
Yeah.
But gently, at least. Like, it's not like a violent ejection.
Yeah, Goblin doesn't quite trust her yet.
Yeah.
Sasquatch goes outside and makes a clearing, drawn by an unknown power to create it.
Despite their own preferences. And so there's a lot of ice carving, but this is not like the Winter Carnival ice sculptures. Yeah. Which, by the way, is really fun.
Then we get the power in question revealing itself. It's Tundra.
It is.
It's and then the rest of the great beasts join in, too.
Because why not?
And
you knew it well once, brother, or should I call you sister? When you took your proper place amongst us in the Shattered Lands.
They're trying to make Wanda join them again.
Yeah.
Sasquatch is like, no thank you, and she's thrown into a wall back into Bedlam's fortress. They probably had just patched this up.
Yeah, so we get Tundra, who thinks of themselves as the greatest of the beasts. There's Solman the Artificer. There's Karyuk, the Corruptor, and should we forget the last one, whoever the fire one is.
Sure. Okay, so the team is like, oh no, we need to attack, and they start fighting. They use the knowledge of their previous battles. And
Olamac.
Yes.
Because it needs to be another Mac.
And they're like, we know how to do this, and then
we've done it before.
Lore's about to get stomped on, but She transports herself and Purple Girl away, leaving the almost indestructible goblin in their place. Mannequin is manhandled by one of the great beasts.
Soulman, he gets like his soul gets freeze-dried, is how he describes it.
Like, translucent claws go through the chest and...
of all four of him.
Yes, but he's able to walk away.
Yeah.
And...
Heather is actually kicking some butt.
Mm-hmm.
She traps the fire one, Ptolemaic, into a plasma funnel,
mm-hmm.
and drops a whole ice sheet on top of Kariuk, the corruptor, so the ice is like the anti-Koryak.
Mm.
And then dispersed the fire one, so that's two down. And then we get Box trying to take out Tundra. Doesn't quite work out so great. Tundra's very large.
Yes.
Sasquatch just straight up snaps the neck of Soulman.
That seems very easy.
It's what I don't know. I remember when they described Soulman, they were like, you're the weakest, but also the most powerful.
Mm.
So I don't think physical strength is really his gig.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for cleaning that up, Asta.
Oh, good job.
So then Tundra is the last one. Madison is like, I'm using this entire complex to make myself a super box.
Because Tundra monologued in that evil villain way and was like, I can just regenerate myself from the earth beneath me.
Yes.
Like, if you blow away a part of me, I'll just grow it back. So he's like, huh, I'll be just as big.
So it's like a big transformer moment. The rest of the team goes up into the head.
Yeah, there's like an elevator from his foot to the head. And they're like, oh, he's ice-based, therefore if you blast him, he'll be destroyed. So it's like that matter-energy conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew that Madison can convert matter into energy? But he does.
It's a law of physics.
I don't
think it's good physics, but it's physics.
Yeah. So he takes up all the machinery of the entire base to create this big armor, and then he spends most of that mass and converts it into energy, and then blows a gigantic crater in the hole in the earth. So Tundra's gone, but also Box is gone.
There's a big explosion.
And it says to be continued.
A big crater is all we have.
It is a smoking crater, to be fair.
So this is Jim Lee's first regular issue.
Oh.
Yeah. It was like his first regular work period rather than just fill-ins. And he said that when he was on this book for like the whole last year, I was up all night at least once a month just doing these things.
Oof.
So that's in retrospect, later in the year where he's talking about this.
It sort of makes sense because these issues look like they would be difficult to do.
So, issue 56, have you ever heard a spaceship scream? Warped! ! Is the title of the issue.
That's the... Oh, no. two punctuation marks in one title.
There is a question mark after scream.
And I get... There's a lot of detail on the Box spaceship.
Mm.
Because all the energy from destroying Tundra apparently blasted them all out into space. So Box became a spaceship.
How do you feel about Alpha Flight in space? But not like the Alpha Flight space station we saw during the Krakoa era.
I don't think I like it.
Okay. This is like the perfect Alpha Flight Star Trek crossover, and you don't like it.
I mean, I could see Mannequin being out in space with Madison Jeffries.
Mm.
Maybe Heather doing some fun space things. I feel like Sasquatch and Goblin don't belong in space, or Purple Girl. Like, they're much more terrestrial-based.
Mm-hmm. So, Box is the spaceship. It's hurtling through space. And inside, Heather and Sasquatch are trying to figure shit out.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we battled Tundra, and...
all that energy was released.
And then, like, Madison transformed into a ship and flew off into space to escape the explosion.
But now he's in pain?
And we're like, okay, he's in so much pain that we can't communicate with him right now. And also, we have Goblin just slashing things.
Yeah, Goblin's not having a good time. Goblin wants out.
And they're like, you know what really works? Chasing. So let's chase Goblin.
And basically act like they're attacking her.
Yeah, and Madison is crying out every time that she slashes something.
Yes.
And Goblin is going towards the head of the ship, which is where Madison's brain is located. And that's leading Heather and Sasquatch that way. And another part of the ship.
They get lost.
Yes.
And Mannequin is like, there's, like, this is a labyrinth. Like, Madison took the maze from down there and made a maze up here.
Proto, Ape Man, and Highbrow are injured. And he draws them back into himself, which seems to heal the collective damage.
Yeah, what do you know? It worked. I'm okay. But the box ship is still in pain.
So he's putting on his little doctor hat, not physically though, and he's like, this is a patient. I'm a doctor.
Yeah. We get Goblin going down a hallway with a conveyor belt of vials with evil little spawn things
like
in them.
Like little red creatures in tubes.
It's like they're little blobs with big blue eyes, and then when Goblin gets close, they like make the angry face and with the eyebrows and like goopy teeth.
Yes.
So Goblin slashes at it, releases all these things.
And
then they attack
her,
Heather, and Sasquatch.
Yes.
Plus some like very Alien the Movie
aliens
creatures.
Yes.
Yes.
Wanda realizes that those aren't part of Madison, but are actually things Bedlam had elsewhere in the complex and which were subsumed into the ship.
Yes. Unfortunately, they were not part of the ship that Madison blew up.
Yes.
So, remember when Goblin put Laura and Purple Girl got subsumed into
Live World?
Yeah,
they blinked out.
Yes, when Goblin appeared. Now we're flash back to them. It's literally a jump cut.
Yeah. It's more like we don't flash back. We sort of flash over. They're just having a great time.
And because I've seen your art, there's a Dream Queen appearance.
Yes.
Is this the first official Dream Queen, or does she actually have to
have
a full image?
I think that would be considered her first cameo appearance.
Okay.
Sort of like Gambit's first cameo appearance is... Oh, where is it?
In the Gambit section over here?
Maybe. I might have stored this lab. It is an Avengers annual. Avengers? X-Men? X-Men? Might be next.
Is that the page art you have by the stairs?
No.
Oh. But
it's an X-Men annual.
Okay.
Rogue's first appearance was an Avengers annual.
Ah.
Anyway, so we have Dream Queen looking on through a crystal ball as the two are like just enjoying themselves.
It's a little bit like Labyrinth and Jareth's crystal orbs that he would send around. Like there's a bunch of them floating around Live World as Laura's leading Kara around.
Yeah.
And that's what Dream Queen is looking out through.
Sasquatch and Heather contain their threats and continue on.
It's true, they do.
Mannequin is sucked into a large tube and spit out into Box's cranium with a prime view of the brain.
He's basically in a pneumatic tube?
Yeah. Like he's a bank document.
Yeah, so maybe at some point Madison Jeffries realized that he needs a doctor, and there's a doctor on the ship.
Yeah.
So he just sucks the doctor up to him.
So there's a cancerous tumor affixed to the brain.
Gigantic brain.
Yes. And he's wondering how to remove it when Goblin finds him and indicates her willingness to help.
Yeah, because he gets sort of dumped out in a little cagey thing. Like, it's sort of webby walls that he can reach through, but it's too small for him to fit through. But Goblin slashes through it.
And she's a little overambitious.
She is. Like, she starts slashing at these cancerous cells, or like the equivalent of them, that are latched onto the brain. And Heather eventually shows up and sort of traps Goblin in a little force field.
And she's like, I should kill her.
Ugh.
And Mannequin is like, we're never going to get Laura or Kara back if you kill Goblin.
Yes. And, yeah.
And then she traps her in the energy field.
It's true. I may just be a junior partner in this firm, but have you lost it? Like, is that something that you need to tell your boss?
Yeah.
That's so, not great.
Mannequin and Heather deal with the smaller aspects of the tumor.
Yeah, and Heather's like, this is the first man I've loved since Mac. I must do everything to protect him.
Mannequin spots the location of the last remaining bits, and he, along with the Spectre of Madison, direct Heather how to precisely eliminate it. Once free of the sickness, Box is able to internally eliminate the Bedlamites, as Sasquatch has dubbed them.
I mean, it is a fun name.
The four members of the team go to the bridge of the ship, where Madison is in the form of a captain's chair.
Oh, this is this panel.
Yes, the ship then flies off to its next location as Heather canoodles the captain's chair and says, kissing it tastes like motor oil.
Remember... Also, Buck...
Like, she is dry-humping this captain's chair in full view of the rest of her team.
Madison is like, care for a seat, Heather? You look like you could use a rest. And she sits down and says, discussion is not what I had in mind in this chair.
They be fucking.
Is the chair a broken washing machine?
Can he make something protrude?
Ugh.
Does it vibrate?
I also love that it takes Mannequin reminding Heather to release Goblin from the little force field bubble that Goblin is trapped in.
Mm.
And they're just in space.
Yes. We get a letters page returning to this issue. Courtney Boland of Suffern, New York, really loved issue 50 and how it impacted the team. However, they call into question the wisdom of explaining how the twins are half-elves, and thinks it was sort of a lazy choice by Bill Mantlow.
Oh.
H. David Olivier of Toronto thinks the book isn't Canadian enough and that it is basically a watered-down Avengers.
Oh. Do you think he's related to Laurence Olivier?
Probably not.
We just watched Pride and Prejudice last night with the Laurence Olivier and Greer Garson version.
Yes.
Hilarious.
And, that's it. Any thoughts as we head into the last issue of this episode?
It's one of those weird things you have to put a pin in how you feel about some of the story parts.
Mm.
Like, they're in space, but they don't really deal with the realities of being in space. You just have to put a pin in that.
Yep.
And hope it gets addressed while they're dealing with the weird Bedlamite situation. Will there be any other appearances of Bedlamites? Is this it? It feels weird for this to just be it and not have them, like, lurking more in the background.
Yes. Issue 57, entitled Life. No, life. There's no punctuation. It's just life.
Compare. The punctuation really is feast or famine.
So, the box ship, still hurtling through space, and it identified a planet where they can land to refuel the ship, because what's happening is that Madison is using resources from the ship to use as power, as energy, converting it into
fuel.
The energy. Yeah, the fuel.
And he's running low.
And so the ship has been getting smaller, which probably isn't a problem with how large it was.
Right.
But they need to get back to Earth.
And so there's a planet nearby, and so they realize, like, oh, we have to land. Oh, no, there's turbulence. Everyone grab onto something. I don't know why Mannequin thinks it's better to split up into four. Like, Proto just gets beamed by a piece of debris and then starts eating it.
Yes.
But I guess Ape-Man has Mannequin in a body scissors with his legs.
Oh.
To keep him safe. As Ape-Man is, like, clinging to a pipe. Oh, and what's the future one again?
Highbrow.
Highbrow is teleporting debris out of the way.
So, which is your favorite?
What do you think is my favorite?
Proto.
It is Proto. It's just a blob.
Yes. Very happy, eating clothes off of hunky men, and taking care of garbage in the same way.
Yeah. Just a blob, having a good time, living its life.
So, they crash land. Madison shows off a new ability, which is leaving the box ship in place while he bounces out, like, in an armored form. And
it's sort of like the mass that he picked up from the station was, like, armor, almost? Or, like...
So he can create two armored forms, sort of?
Yeah, like, the stuff in between the box armor, like the box armor is like a web,
yeah,
holding it together, and he can retract that part while leaving the main ship intact. There's a big smooch with him and Heather.
Yeah.
Which really bothers Mannequin, because he's like, you two are we're lost in space, you two are lost in each other's arms, and my girlfriend is lost where?
Goblin, give me back my girlfriend. And she just slashes him in return.
Yeah.
Heather blasts Goblin.
And Box is like, stop attacking her.
Stop attacking this child? I think it qualifies as abuse, like, at this point.
Single-digit age. Yeah, check it out, leader lady. You don't want elephants fighting among themselves, but the only one you aimed your plasma burst at was Goblin. It's clear from the start you don't like having her here. And Heather's like, she's an animal.
And then she's like, okay, well, coochie coo, Goblin, where's Laura and Kara?
Yeah, I guess we did induct you into beta flight.
So then we go to Live World, and they're enjoying their time until Laura's like, there's something scary nearby.
Yeah. Goblin changes places with me before the scary thing gets too close. And Kara asks, well, how does Goblin know when you're scared? And Laura says she always knows. See, it's starting, and it's like a little kidney bean of space that sort of envelops them, and then Goblin is there.
And then Goblin is back in Live World, and a hand reaches out and gives her a pet on the head.
It looks like a Dream Queen hand.
Yes. And the unseen figure is sort of contemplating, how do I use you to take over an adjoining world?
Right. I've conquered this world, and now I'm bored.
Yep.
I want something new.
Purple Girl leaps into the arms of Mannequin. And Heather fruitlessly tries to get information from Laura,
who has withdrawn again.
Yes. Madison is on the bridge of the ship using his powers and has drills go into the crust of the planet below to extract resources.
And there's very strange things happening. So as they were entering the planet's atmosphere, because of the chemical nature of it all and the engine of it all and the friction of it all, there's this weird energy stuck to the ship, and now below the surface, the very clay of this lifeless planet begins to reform, to refuse, to live. We just need Peter Cushing screaming, it's alive!
Oh, that's not Peter Cushing, though.
What?
In the original Frankenstein?
He does it in one of them.
Oh.
Doesn't he?
I don't think so. I think that's a trademark thing. They couldn't do it in Hammer movies.
Oh, but I can hear his voice saying it.
So, they try to lift off, but crystals emerging from the ground have grasped the ship and prevent it from leaving. And Sasquatch is like, well, there is no life on the planet before, but we sort of did a big bang to this planet and created life.
Yeah.
And this is our doing.
Fun fact, Proto becomes friends with Laura Dean. It's cute. Proto makes like a little hand and waves.
Yes.
And then as they're taking off, they're, like, hugging. Like, she's holding on to Proto.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a fun little countdown that happens with, like, a close-up of each person, including Ape-Man.
Yes. And that's when they figure out, we can't lift off. Madison makes space suits for everyone.
As you do. Super fun.
And they go outside, they use their powers to start breaking the crystals. Using, like, brute force or blasts from Heather's suit.
And then
Sasquatch is like, the crystals are bleeding.
Like, they're legit alive.
Purple Girl uses her powers to understand the crystals, but they're such a radically different form of life that she gets really overwhelmed by the mental imagery. And Laura, seeing that she's in distress, swaps places with Goblin, who gets a mental command from Kara to stop attacking and instead grabs her and bounds off.
Yeah. And then Heather's like, I didn't really like it, but I guess Goblin did save Kara.
And Goblin then becomes the only member of the team who understands what is going on with the crystals. And it matches the vibrations of her purrs to those emanating from the crystals, which causes them to withdraw.
Yeah. She interceded to prevent their destruction. And ours.
The team goes back onto the ship and they take off, with Heather visiting Goblin to make amends, promising to be better in the future.
Because in this panel, Heather's like, but Goblin's nothing but an unthinking animal. Like, she's used that language a lot in the past few issues.
The only way she's making amends and being like, I promise to be better, is really like, I promise to not try to kill you anymore, but I'm still going to act real shitty to you.
I mean, I guess you have to start somewhere.
So what? The team then wonders where Laura is, and the sinister figure of Live World is seen in full as she contemplates a happy Laura Dean in a crystal ball, promising that no one will be able to leave Live World until she can too.
Yeah. I like this issue better. It dealt with them being in space.
Yes. Oh. I think this is supposed to be Ben Radford of Corrales, New Mexico, writes in about how few original members of the team are left, but isn't that sad about it.
Oh.
He likes that Wanda is still there, as Sasquatch was always the most compelling character to him. He doesn't see Kara sticking around long due to her power set not fitting in with the rest of the team. N.S. Blue Nose of Cape Breton, Nova Scotia.
Blue Nose?
Yeah, I think it's Nova Scotia Blue Nose. I think it's their pen name. Really likes the dramatic moments in the book and applauds Madison actually noting the age difference between Mannequin and Purple Girl.
Yeah. Someone needs to.
Yeah. So yeah, it's sort of our introductory arc to Goblin.
Yeah.
We all up in space now.
I not to speak for both of us, but I feel like we really like Goblin.
Yes. She might be one of my favorite characters from Volume 1 of Alpha Flight.
She's treated so horribly by Heather, though.
Yeah. Like, and again, like, the first time I really read Alpha Flight, I liked Heather, and then you reread it, and then you're like, she's not really a great leader.
No.
Like, she's a nuanced hero. I'll give her that. But very flawed as a leader.
Like, at the beginning, I feel like she was fine holding the team together.
Yes.
Up until the, like, okay, bye, my new team is so much better than those misfits that Mac had.
Yeah.
The Shade.
Yep.
And then all this stuff.
Yeah, now she's just straight up wanting to murder multiple children.
Yeah, the ones encased in wood, which,
yep,
luckily for her, turned out to be okay.
Yes.
And now Goblin.
Goblin, who's done nothing wrong. Like, she hasn't really existed with human beings.
Like, and if you start from a place of compassion...
Yeah.
It actually works. Yeah.
Yeah. So, next issue, or next episode, and next set of issues, we actually get Dream Queen content.
Oh. In space.
In space. And also weird, weird things happen.
I mean, someone made the comment of, like, we're lost in space. Oh, yeah. Mannequin did. But then someone else at one point was like, but where are we in relation to Earth?
Yes. Like, how do we get back there? Because this isn't great.
Did Madison Jeffries come up with stellar cartography when he made the starship?
Maybe.
I have questions.
Yes. So we really start digging into the Dream Queen stuff. Things are going to get weird.
Oh, good.
We are going to go to the Chinese-Russian border.
Oh.
Yeah, in a way you won't expect. So...
in that little bit to the northeast of Mongolia?
You'll see.
Oh.
So that'll be in our next episode, all about Alpha Flight. I have to pull issues to figure out what we're reading next time for Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Now that we've finished Telepathy War.
Yeah. So it'll either be a 5-issue one-shot episode on one of the series, or we will crack into an ongoing.
Gotcha.
We'll see.
It'll be fun.
It will be. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. We will catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.